Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
It is not Rick Moore, it's Sean McCord, your faithful occasional host on a Sunday. And I'm sitting across from Jane Kulo. Jane, thank you. You come in regularly this time of year. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you.
And Jane Kulo is, I'm going to get your title right, because you've got a couple of titles. You're the director or the creative director. What is your title of the Virginia Festival of the Book?
I'm program director.
Program director.
Of the Virginia Festival of the Book.
Yes.
And I am the director of the Virginia Center for the Book, which produces the festival.
Got it. Okay. And it's also the Festival of the Book.
Yes.
Let's see this right up front. The Virginia Festival of the Book runs March 21st through 25th this year. You can, I'm going to say this several times, but, questions about who's going to be there and what they're going to be talking about, you should go to vabook.org. That's vabook.org with the creative director, Jane Kulo. The festival starts on the 21st, which is a Wednesday. It runs Wednesday through Sunday, 21st through 25th. Let's just jump in, and we don't have to do things in a strictly chronological order, but let's talk about the very first day of the festival. What's the first big event that happens on the 21st?
At 11:45 on Wednesday morning, March 21st, we kick off the festival, our 24th annual festival, with Leland Melvin. He's speaking at the Read and Lead Lunch, and he's got a fascinating story. He grew up in Lynchburg, played football at Lynchburg, in a high school in Lynchburg, played football at the University of Richmond, was on an NFL team for a while, then came back to the University of Virginia to get a master's in engineering, I think in material science, and then went to NASA. And went to space.
Oh, so it was that football to NASA.
Exactly,
track.
Exactly. Flying into the end zone in space.
Nice, and nicely done.
He's still a resident of Lynchburg, and he's written a story called Chasing Space. He's actually written two stories. So the story of his facing challenges every step of the way. There was a time, you know, in high school when he completely muffed catching a Hail Mary pass, and the coaches, the scouts for the colleges were in the stands. His coach threw him right back in and said, "We're going to run it again, and this time you're going to get it right." Uh-huh. And he did.
Nice.
There was a time when he was in NASA in training to go into space, and through a number of circumstances, he lost his hearing. It turned out to be temporary, but he lost his hearing for a few weeks. And at that point, he would not have been able to go into space.
Yeah.
So he's written the story about his life.
Although in space, no one can hear you scream.
But I think they need to hear you talk.
Okay, fair enough.
But anyway, he has written the book for grown-ups, but he has also written a young reader's version. And it's called also Chasing Space. And it includes some science experiments that kids can do in their own home.
What a nice idea.
It's absolutely fantastic. And the Tuesday before the festival officially begins, he will speak in two multi-school assemblies held at St. Anne's. Schools will bus their students in, and he'll speak in front of 2,400 students about his experiences, and he's promised that he will wear his NASA jumpsuit.
Nice. That not the actual evac.
I think the blue one. The blue one with the logo. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another great thing you do, and this is going to come up a couple of times, is actually bring writers into schools.
Yes.
So bring them to the kids.
Exactly. And one of the things that we do when we invite authors to the festival, and when authors submit their own work, we ask if they would be willing to visit a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them do, and we book a lot of those in public and private classrooms across the region. And they can go in. It might be maybe talking to a dozen kids in a high school creative writing class, Or it might be like Leland Melvin talking to 2,400 third through fifth graders.
Yeah.
But the impact that that can have on a student to see and hear from the actual author of a book, it's like, oh, that's how it happens.
You know what? I will tell you, you're going to laugh, but when I was in the fourth grade, someone from the local radio station came in and talked to my class.
Yes.
And all it takes is moments like that to go, oh, wait, there's this thing out there, and people actually do it. And it just needs a, you know, you just kind of need to, you don't even need to open that door. You just need to know that there is a door that you can go up and knock on.
Yes.
So absolutely. Now, I imagine that not all of your visiting authors, depending on the type of book they are and what they've written, would be the best fit for an elementary school. But a football player turned scientist turned astronaut
is a great fit.
I can see why that one was at the top of your list.
Well, and the other thing about that, Sean, is we work very closely with the teachers to look at their curriculum and what are the topics that really help them get interesting stories in front of those students and also interesting presenters. So it's very much a matchmaking procedure and determined by what the classroom is focused on, what the teachers want to do, and what the authors can speak to.
So that's the big opening event with Leland Melvin, A Read and Lead Lunch with Leland Melvin on Wednesday, March 21st at 11:45 in the Omni Hotel. And again, people should go to vabook.org. And it's a really good site, too, because it's not just like a listing of all the events. You can build like a little shopping cart.
Absolutely. There's a built-in app called a Bookmark where you can sign up with your email and you can put together your own personalized schedule.
Right.
So at this point in the game, go in and fill that with anything that interests you and then start narrowing it down as we get closer and we have to deal with the reality of being in one place at one time.
Right. Right. Because, I mean, I know, having done a little bit of event scheduling myself, I know that it can be, you know, maybe frustrating for a patron to go like, oh, here's two great events, and I want to go to both of them at the same time. But as a programmer, I know, it's kind of a good problem to have, you know, a wealth of really interesting people coming in.
And the other thing that we're trying to do, which I think a lot of event planners do, is try to provide something for everybody.
Right.
So while we may have 5, we may have 8 or 10 programs all going on at the same time, we try to make sure that there's something in nonfiction, something in fiction, different types of fiction, something in poetry. And we're programming for a wide range of audiences, from picture book viewers to readers of poet laureate poetry. So anything and everything in between, we try to make sure there's something for everybody.
Right. And what is a couple of things that are really great about the Virginia Festival of the Book is that you get these authors coming in. I particularly like the panels where you have, say, 3 authors coming in who may not even know each other, but they've written books that kind of dovetail with each other, or they're, you know, in the same genre, or they talk about the same era of history, or, you know, they come from a common background, and you get these people together and they read a little bit of their book and they talk, and sometimes you can see, if you're an audience member, you can see friendships being formed in front of you.
You know, not only friendships, professional relationships as well, but also we feel very strongly that in the best of our programs, the sum is greater than the addition of the parts, right? So, for example, we have a program, I'm probably not going to get the name right, but one of the books is called Grassroots. It's about the history of marijuana. The other is called Bones. It's about the Mexican cartel and how they used racehorses to try to launder their money. And then a radio fellow out of Richmond, Robin Farzad, has a book called, I don't know what that book is called, but it's about the hotel in Miami.
There's only a couple of thousand books in the festival, Jane.
Okay. Exactly. It's about the hotel in Miami that was the hangout for the coke dealers in the 80s. So this program looks at pot fast horses and cocaine cowboys. And the conversation that each of them can have then that is going to be more in, you know, a sort of further and more interesting than if you just read the three books,
right?
Because it's like, what did you learn about that you couldn't fit into this book? How does what they were doing, these cocaine cowboys in Miami Beach, how does that relate to what these brothers were doing in Mexico and Texas? You know, and where's the overlap in those conversations? I love that.
And I'm sure as a program director, you must really love those moments when you find these three books and you go, oh, yeah.
Yes.
And it also must be frustrating for you that you can't attend personally every single one of these discussions.
Yes. And honestly, I make some of my decisions about where I will be based upon which programs are going to be recorded by C-SPAN's Book TV, which will be recorded at your facility at the Harrison Institute Auditorium, which will be recorded at City Council Chambers, because those I can catch up on later.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the big event the first day. I want to hit some of the highlights, and then we can kind of go back and fill things in between, because we have a local luminary on March 22nd, which is the Thursday, at the Martin Luther King Jr. Performing Arts Center, and that is Keezer Khan.
Yes.
By the way, I already have my tickets for that one.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that
good.
Was like the first set of tickets I got.
Yes.
As you pointed out, many of the events are in my workplace at the auditorium at the Harrison Small Library at UVA. So I get to be there, watching some of these panels and recording them and being a part of it. But I didn't want to miss this. Keezer Khan has become kind of a personal hero. But let's remind people, as if Charlottesvillians need reminding, but let's just remind people who Keezer Khan is and how he first came to prominence.
Well, I think for most of the world, Keezer Khan first came to prominence when he spoke at the Democratic National Convention in the summer of 2016.
Yeah.
But his story began in Pakistan decades before that, when he was a law student and he came across a sheaf of papers, not even a bound document, but a sheaf of papers that was the text of the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And as he read that, he was very aware of the dictator in charge of Pakistan at that point. And he read these and he said, why are these not universal human rights? Why is this just the Bill of Rights in the United States of America? But it began his lifelong interest in the founding principles of the United States of America and in the documents that create our rule of law. So his story begins there and goes through working in the oil fields in Abu Dhabi, I think. I'm forgetting now. Mm-hmm. And eventually coming to the United States, which he thought was temporary. But he came to the United States to further his law education because he was accepted into Harvard Law School for an advanced degree. And he had to work for a number of years to be able to afford to take the time to do that. His family ended up staying. They settled in the D.C. area. And then, as many people know, their middle son, who was a ROTC grad of UVA, was killed trying to avert a suicide attack in Iraq. So they both Mr. Khan and his wife are Gold Star parents, and they have been incredible supporters of the ROTC program here and the alumni from that program. And he felt it was very important to speak out in support of the immigrants, in support of the U.S. Constitution, and their talk about the sacrifice their family made. And his story is very well told, and it is very touching.
His book is called An American Family, A Memoir of Hope and Sacrifice, and the cover shows he and his wife standing before the crowds at the Democratic Convention when he famously pulled out a copy of the Constitution of his pocket and waved in the air. We don't have to repeat what he said. We all know what he said.
Yeah.
And apparently he always, not only always carries a copy of the Constitution around with him, but he's been known to just give it away to people. Oh, and yes, of course. And yes, you're showing me another book. This is Our Constitution, Discover America with the Gold Star Family.
So similar to Leland Melvin that we were just talking about, Keyser Khan has published two books, one for the adult audience and one for the young audience. But this young reader's version is not a younger version of his life story. This is a book about the founding principles of the United States, including the actual documents themselves, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and how they came about and what they mean to us. And this has a very, this has a local aspect to it, too. Mm-hmm. After we learned about who Mr. Khan was, the fall of 2016, a local teacher asked him to come talk to an audience, a classroom. And this was actually Mr. Merrick at Peabody School in Charlottesville. And he asked Mr. Khan to come speak to his 6th, 7th, and 8th social studies students. And Mr. Khan said he was very happy to, but he was trying to figure out how could he, you know, what did he have to say to them? How could he connect? He ended up taking with him a facsimile of the Constitution with handwritten edits by people like George Washington. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he said, you know, they pulled out their, he told them to bring their magnifying glasses, and the kids were fascinated. And that's when the decision to write this book came about. And he will be speaking privately also at the Martin Luther King Jr. Performing Arts Center the day before to 900 middle school students.
Yeah. And so it bears pointing out that one of the reasons the Virginia Festival of the Book is such a gem in our town is there's no way even you, Jane Kulo, creative director, could have read all these books. But the stories that the people bring, that the opportunity to see authors, see people who've had these life experiences come in and talk. You don't even need to be, how shall I put this gently? You don't even need to be a big reader. I mean, you know, we're a book family. I think you've been in my house. We have many, many, many books.
Yes.
But there are other families that don't. But if you're just interested in the stories of these people, and you need not have read their books, but just the chance to connect, especially with somebody like Keyser Khan, who lives here in Charlottesville. I've seen him around town. Honestly, you know, I've never like been able to just walk up to him and introduce myself, which I should. He needs to be in front of crowds, yes, telling his story and talking about these things that move him. We're talking about the Virginia Festival of the Book, which runs March 21st through 25th. That's a Wednesday through Sunday here in Charlottesville. My guest is Jane Kulo, the creative director of the book festival. You're listening to WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. This is Sean McCord. We'll be right back. This is Sean McCord on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with Jane Kulo, the creative director of the Virginia Festival of the Book. I just love saying that. You know, there are... I'm going to do a little sidebar. You may or may not be aware that there is a pie baking contest here in town.
Yes.
Every year. I've been a judge in it. And some of the organizers jokingly refer to it as the Virginia Festival of the Pie.
That works.
But this is not about pie. This is about books. And I mentioned a couple of times vabook.org, vabook.org, where you can go on and build a shopping cart. How much does it cost to go to most of these events, Jane?
I would, 99% of these programs are free.
That's what I was leading you up for.
If there is a ticket required, and in some cases with some venues, there's a free ticket required. Mm-hmm. The program description says that right near the top. So,
right,
you know, the two programs we've talked about so far, Leland Melvin is a lunch. So there's certainly a ticket required,
right,
for that. And for Keyser Khan, there's a ticket. It's a $5 ticket for the Martin Luther King Performing Arts Center.
Totally worth it. But otherwise, 98 to 99% of the stuff is free.
All you have to do is show up.
How does that work?
Well, we are very fortunate.
What's the catch, Jane?
We are very fortunate to have a lot of sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
We write a lot of grants. We also are very fortunate to have a lot of people that have stepped up as individual donors to give money to support our work. And most people, you know, hear us say at the beginning of every program that the festival is free to attend, but it is not free to produce. It does
right.
cost money.
Right.
And so we ask for support for that.
Excellent. And they can find out how to do that
at vabook.org. There is a button called Give, and we would be very happy to receive any support that anyone could give.
All right, let's jump forward a couple of days. The festival is March 21st to the 25th, a Wednesday through Saturday. Let's talk about Saturday. In pursuit of truth. It's interesting, isn't it, that we live in an era where truth and facts and, you know, immutability suddenly becomes controversial?
You know, Sean, it's almost like you crafted that lead-in, because one of these books is the history
mm-hmm.
of hoaxes mm-hmm. in the United States. And Kevin Young, so let me back up for a second. This program we developed in partnership with the National Book Foundation. They give the National Book Awards every year. And we said, what if we could bring in some of the honorees? So we have three of their nonfiction honorees from the 2017 awards. And the first of which I'm going to speak about is Kevin Young, who's also been honored by earlier National Book Awards for his poetry. But this book that he started to write, thought it would be a pamphlet. And it's radio, so people can't see this. But the book is about 2.5 inches.
It ain't a pamphlet. And what's the title of that book, Jane?
The title is Bunk, The Rise of Hoaxes, Humbug, Plagiarists, Phonies, Post-Facts, and Fake News.
And for my listening audience, that ain't a pamphlet.
And the thing, you know, when we think about that, think about P.T. Barnum, think about Orson Welles,
mm-hmm.
think about all of the hoaxes that have been played on American audiences through history. And he brings that up to the current day. But one of the things that Kevin Young writes about is the sort of pervasive underlying hoax that there is a hierarchy of human value based upon color. And that is something that dates back to America's earliest days, and it's something that we are clearly still dealing with now.
I am listening, but I'm also I'm also looking through this book.
You can't read and talk at the same time.
This isn't exactly a large type either.
No, but
this is a very dense volume.
It's a very dense volume, but the fascinating thing with this book is because it's written by a poet, it is a narrative that just keeps you moving along. It's very, very well written.
So tell us about this event, In Pursuit of Truth, An Evening with the National Book Awards. That's Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Paramount Theater, Saturday, March 24th.
Saturday, March 24th, the executive director of the National Book Foundation, Lisa Lucas, who has said very clearly that reading is something that we all can do more of, we all should care about. She will be in town to moderate that program. The other two authors are Erica Armstrong Dunbar has written a book called Never Caught, which is the story of one of the slaves in the Washington household when the White House, actually what it was called then was the President's House, was in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just a fact that I had no idea of, and I would think probably most people do not, is that when they were living in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania was a free state. And of
right.
course, the Washingtons had slaves that they had brought with them from Mount Vernon. And in Pennsylvania, if a slave lived there for 6 months, he or she could then declare him or herself free.
Wow.
And when the Washingtons learned this, they had to take action, which included shipping their slaves home every 6 months to ensure that they could not do that. So that's just the beginning of a fascinating story that really forces us to look again at what we might think of some of our founding fathers.
Man, that just makes my gut hurt.
Yes, and it's very well done. Erica Armstrong Dunbar is an historian, and you know, when we think about sort of journalism being the first take on history.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have history that is the third and fourth and fifth take on history. And that's what some of these stories are in pursuit of truth. The third author is one that everybody should be familiar with. David Graham has been writing for The New Yorker for years. He wrote The Lost City of Z, which was a huge bestseller mm-hmm. made into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
This book called The Killers of the Flower Moon is about the Osage tribe in the Oklahoma panhandle in the 20s. When the tribe was moved to that reservation, their treaty with the State Department, they knew of mineral rights, and they negotiated that the tribe would own the mineral rights. And another thing I did not know, they became one of the wealthiest cohorts in the country of that time.
Hmm.
To the great interest and disgust of many white Americans, how could it be that this tribe would be so rich? But the United States government did not trust them to manage their own affairs. And every member of the tribe had to have a guardian. And, how did this happen? Many of them started dying in mysterious ways.
Huh.
That's the beginning of the story. And the wonderful thing about this book, which is wonderful, and it is also a horrifying book. Horrifying story, really well written. And two-thirds of the way through, you think, now I know what happened. David Graham investigated this. He has shared all of this. J. Edgar Hoover is a part of it. You know, you understand what happens. How come there's so much more left to the book?
Yeah.
And Graham wasn't done. He said, that's what we know, but what else don't we know? And he started digging into the archives and making some assumptions that are really fact-based based on that. So it's a great book. I think this is going to be an incredible conversation. Again, 8 o'clock at the Paramount. This is a ticketed event, but those tickets are $17.50, which is about as cheap as you'll ever get for the Paramount.
For the Paramount? Yeah, you can't even walk in the door normally for that much. And that event is In Pursuit of Truth, an evening with the National Book Awards, Saturday, March 24th at 8 p.m. And again, you should go to vabook.org and start booking now. Are there some events that people should... That may be sold out, that may not be able to get tickets to?
We have a couple of events that are sold out. They were both free and all the tickets were reserved.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Wednesday night, young adult authors who are writing about really tough topics dealing with race and police brutality and shootings. Those seats are all reserved, but we know that's at the Kaplan Theater at 6 o'clock on Wednesday, featuring Jason Reynolds, who is a real superstar in young adult books. But we know what happens with sold out free programs. Not everybody shows up. So if you see that program and it interests you,
right.
Or if you see the Saturday afternoon 4 p.m. program featuring Jim Ryan, who is the incoming UVA president, that's at the Paramount. It's free. It's sold out. If those programs interest you, show up, because 15 minutes before the program starts, the venues will release reserved seats to those waiting in line.
Jim Ryan, Saturday, say that one again.
Saturday, 4 p.m. at the Paramount, talking about his book, Wait, What?
Yeah.
With Mark Lorenzoni in conversation.
All right. If you haven't, Jim Ryan is the incoming president of UVA. And I'm already a fan of his. I probably shouldn't say that because, I work at UVA and ultimately he's going to be my boss, but I'm just going to say it. You got to check out his, it was a commencement speech he gave called Wait What? And so if for no other reason than to meet that guy who made that amazing speech, who a few months from now is going to be living here in town and the boss. Down the street. You also mentioned Jane Kulo, the creative director of the Virginia Festival of the Book. You mentioned before we came on the air that she had to move somebody.
Yes,
because of
we
interest.
Did. We had a very late entrance to participation in the festival, Dr. Ibram Kendi. And with this came to us through the support from the Center for Race in Public Education in the South at the Curry School,
mm-hmm.
and also the Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture. They were able to bring Dr. Kendi to the university, and it was during the festival, and they said, you know, could we collaborate on this? We initially scheduled this. The program will be at 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon, March 23rd. We initially scheduled it in the Ruth Kaplan Theater at the Culbra Theater, and the
seats a few hundred people.
It seats 300 plus people,
yeah.
And all of the seats were taken within 2 days.
Wow.
So we have now published on our website, we have moved that program to University Baptist Church, which seats 650 people. Those people who already have tickets will have some reserved seating for them, but it is open seating for everyone, and we hope everybody will come out.
And the website, we'll mention it again, vabook.org. As I said, you can go in and make a little shopping cart for yourself. Just check out the things that you're interested in, build a schedule. You can do the same thing on your phone. But there's some people who prefer just good old-fashioned printed festival guides.
It is. It's hard to get away from the habit of pulling out a highlighter with the print schedule.
This
is a time of year that people start asking us, where's the schedule? It always comes out the Sunday before the festival as part of the Daily Progress.
Right.
So it's a special supplement for the Daily Progress on Sunday, March 18th.
Yeah.
And it is bigger than ever. It's 56 pages, full color this year. And we also we get copies of it on the Friday before, and we start putting it out in the major venues, the libraries, the bookstores, you know, all around town, so you can watch for it then.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So if that's how you roll, go out and pick up your printed copy. And actually, it's actually very nice. It's full color. It's got little articles in it.
We try to make it, you know, very user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we did this year, actually, in response to requests, we've always held put together a calendar grid, and then said, for more information about these programs, go to the website.
Right.
And then we listed all the bios for the authors. This year, we flipped that. The program itself, the printed schedule itself, has much more information about the programs.
Mm-hmm.
We have an index for the authors, and then you can get more information on both of them on the website. But the website, you know, and you have very kindly said vabook.org a lot of times, which I really appreciate. But one of the things that we'd like people to know is that when you go to that website and you click on the schedule, there's a menu for the schedule. You can look at schedules per day and, you know, based upon how your calendar works.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, you will be busy during the day at the Harrison Institute recording things. But what about those evenings? You can look at the times that you can go out. You can look at venues. If
mm-hmm.
somebody's coming to town and says, I just want to stay downtown, you know, you can look at those venues, or you can look for topics. So if what you're interested in is current affairs, go there, look for current affairs and see all the programs related to that. If what you're interested in is Regency romances or poetry or Spanish language, you know, you can look for that.
Yeah. And the fun thing about doing it that way is that you know that there are people out there because the festival's so big. And do you know how many people attend the festival?
Last year, March of 2017, we had more than 30,000 people.
30,000?
Yes.
Wow.
And that's and honestly, the last 3 years, we've grown considerably. That's a 50% increase over 2015.
Really? That much?
Sorry. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. So who the heck knows how many people are going to be here this year? But what I was saying was that when you pick these things, when you fill out your map, you know, say, okay, mm-hmm. these are the topics I'm interested in, or this is where I can park, and, you know, I'm close to these venues, or this is the hours that I'm free. There's always other people who have the exact same schedule, and you end up running into the same person,
yes.
right, over and over again.
We have people that come from out of town
mm-hmm.
that run into friends, their festival friends who live here
right.
because they see them year in, year out.
Yes. See them once a year.
We love that.
Virginia Festival of the Book. A lot of the topics that we've talked about so far are, not so way to put this, they are within the political realm when we talk about truth, when we talk about racism, when we
mm-hmm.
talk about history. And I'm going to ask the same question of you that I asked Wesley Harris, the programmer for the film festival, when he came in here in November. We live in a post-August 11 Charlottesville. As a programmer for a very big public event like this, have you felt a special responsibility to address some of the issues that became unearthed after the alt-right came in and invaded our town?
Yes, without a doubt. And I think that not only the sort of explicit issues of white nationalism and its sources and where we go now, but also some of those underlying issues, such as economic inequality.
Mm-hmm.
We have the open response. We have a program at 2:00 on Saturday at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center that features three historians and one reporter. And the historians are Kathleen Ballou, who looks at the historic background of the far right movement, Nancy McLean, who looks at Virginia based background for support of all far right programming or far right politicism, and Kianga Yamada Taylor, who looks at what African American feminists were doing in the 70s and their oral histories, and it's sort of like how that led to the Black Lives Movement and where that could lead going forward. And then the reporter, Vegas Tenold, was actually embedded with the alt-right, the white nationalists, for 3 or 4 years and had finished writing his book almost, and he came and was in Charlottesville in August 11 and 12, reporting on it then. So those four authors talking in conversation with Jamel Bowie, who's a writer for Slate, will be addressing those issues directly.
I'm very excited to have Jamel Bowie here.
Yes.
Yeah. And I will say, as a frequent attendee of the Virginia Festival of the Book, is that that the festival really succeeds in presenting both a cross section of interests and people in our nation, but also in our town.
Yes.
Everybody comes out to the book festival. There really is something for everybody. I'm talking to Jane Kulo, the creative director of the Virginia Festival of the Book, which runs March 21st through 25th. That's a Wednesday through Sunday. You can find out about what's going on at the festival at vabook.org. This is Sean McCord on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. It is a Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call in WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Sean McCord with my guest, creative director of the Virginia Festival of the Book, Jane Kulo. The festival runs March 21st through 25th. That's a Wednesday through Sunday. You can find out about what's going on by listening to this very show and also visiting vabook.org. Okay, so I asked you, Jane, to come in with a list of highlights of things that we particularly want to talk about. And it looks like of the list of 24 or so, we've talked about maybe 6.
We keep trying.
So I'm gonna let you lead the conversation for a few minutes and just ask you, what is another topic or event that you particularly want people to know about?
Sure. Well, right before the break, we were talking about the events of August 11 and 12 and some of the underlying issues.
Yeah.
And I mentioned economic inequality. And we actually have a couple of programs related to that. One on Thursday. The authors are Richard Reeves, Keith Payne, and Mirza Baradaran. And they look at the economic inequality in America, and especially Baradaran. Her book is about banking and how it is different if you're Black. That is a really poor paraphrase of the title and subtitle, but it's the focus of her academic exploration, and the book is very well done. I think that's going to be a really good conversation. That's at Thursday at noon. But also Saturday afternoon at 4:00, we have a couple of books that look at those who are left behind by America's economic growth. One is a Washington Post reporter, Monica Hess, who reported on the Eastern Shore arsonist case. And those of who may not remember this, it was in 2012 to 2013, I think, mm-hmm. and somewhere between Thanksgiving and Easter, more than 80 fires were started. And she started reporting on it when it was at trial, and then she wrote a book about it called American Fire, which we keep recommending to people. All three of us in our office read it last summer and just said, this is, it's so well done, and it has so many points of entry, whether, you know, the a little bit of craziness, the empathetic viewpoint of all the people involved, but also that the Eastern Shore and really how it was left behind by the economy. We've paired that with another book of a similar sort of similar slant called The Hamlet Fire by Bryant Simon, who wrote about the poultry factory in North Carolina that burned down, and that people were locked in and a number of people died, most of them very poor, many of them African-American. So those two stories, and that's going to be moderated by Grace Hale, who's American Studies professor here. I think it'll be a fascinating story. You know, we talked about the political issues, and one of the things that really fascinated us with the 2017 festival is we had a number of topics that we initially thought were history or they were social studies or something like that, but they became political mm-hmm. just by vent of what had been happening in our country. So when you look at culture, when you look on our program at current affairs, there are a number of those same things. We have a program about China-U.S. relations. And one of the authors, Howard French, lived in China, reported for the New York Times there for many years. I think that'll be a great program. We have a program on diplomacy that the it includes a professor from UVA, Todd Sechter, who has written about the diplomacy involved in nuclear talks. We have a professor from William & Mary, Marcus Holmes, who talks about face-to-face diplomacy, you know, and how important it is for the government leaders to be in the same room. You know, he also does a lot of work in his classroom with social media diplomacy, which, you know, is quite relevant. And the third author, Trita Parsi, has written about the Iranian nuclear negotiations and was in the room at the time. So getting those three perspectives together, I think will just lead to a fascinating conversation, one that we wouldn't have access to otherwise without something like the Virginia Festival of the Book bringing them to town.
I mentioned that the festival, both in terms of your guests and in terms of your patrons, does well to represent a cross-section of our nation and our city. But you have a group that is specifically trying to support diversity within the book festival.
Yes, and we're so appreciative. We set about 2.5 years ago. We set the goal that we would not only increase the diversity of the authors we brought to town, we would increase it to 50% within 5 years, mm-hmm. and that's. We see it ourselves as an audacious goal, but we see it as something that's very important for us to work toward. And we're very grateful to the CFA Institute for looking at that and saying, we support that. And we support that with significant sponsorship funding. And in order to bring more attention to that, we'd like to get recognition of our funding for 8 different programs that are in a wide variety of genres. And they're also bringing information about that to their staff, you know, a few hundred people here in Charlottesville, to try and bring attention to the importance of diverse voices. Sort of in the parlance of the We Need Diverse Books organization, which began a few years back, these authors from underrepresented backgrounds can provide a mirror to people in the audience who may be from a similar background, but they can also provide a door, a look at a different world. And we feel very strongly that it's a way for us all to better understand each other's humanity.
So if you want to find out about the events that the CFA Institute is sponsoring, from the front page of the website, vabook.org, there's a big squid there. You can click on that, and it'll list specifically the events that are coming up. CFA Institute is a global organization with one of their headquarters here in town.
Their headquarters is right here in town.
They're also in London and New York and Toronto, but their main headquarters is right here. I don't remember what CFA stands for. Something to do with financial analysts.
Certified financial analysts.
Excellent.
And what they are is the accrediting organization for financial analysts all around the world.
Right. So I'm just looking at the page now. They're sponsoring readings such as Code Girls, The Untold Story of the American Women Codebreakers of World War II, Avoiding War with China, Everything Under the Heavens, also about China, et cetera. Some really, really, as a political slash history slash current events kind of guy myself, these are the things that really appeal to me. Oh, and specifically, this one really sounds intriguing. Tripping the Tail, Fantastic, Weird Fiction by Deaf and Hard of Hearing Writers.
Yes. We had the help of the folks at Civic Access to put that program together. And it's the editors and contributors to an anthology of fiction by deaf and hard of hearing authors. And our interest is to try to show the diversity of writing that is available to us from that cohort.
Right, because as someone who has full use of all five of my senses, by default, I just assume that, you know, everybody does. So when I, you know, when I read a story, it's very useful to read a story. You know, I mean, it's, sure, sometimes you read a story and there will be someone, you know, who's blind, or for example, but it's kind of, you know, it's kind of, that's kind of the point of the story.
Yeah.
But to read a collection of stories by people who go through the world experiencing it differently than we do, and be able to write about that, and not just write about that, but weird fiction. That's right up my alley.
Yes.
Yeah. This is going to be fascinating. So, and again, I'll mention it probably now for the last time, vabook.org, to find out about all these events. So you came in here, Jane, clutching a handful of books, none of which were small.
Yes.
Let's talk logistics. When someone goes to one of these events, and they want to meet the author, how do they get a hold of the books?
So we provide book sales and signing at almost every event.
Mm-hmm.
And when we don't, we note that there is a we note why or that we cannot. But for example, if you go to this a cooking demo at the Charlottesville Cooking School, the cookbook by that author will be available for sale immediately after the event in the venue.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a program at the Harrison Institute about the women of the Gilded Age on Saturday afternoon, those books will be available for sale immediately after, and the authors will sign them. We do that in every program.
Yeah. And actually, you mentioned a good point. Authors will sign them.
Yes.
So you always, I notice that you're very good about that. You always schedule some time between events, so you don't always have to rush out from one and get pell-mell over to the next one. You try to schedule time for people to actually get a chance to meet the authors. And they, across the board, they're very gracious.
Yes.
Yeah.
And authors tell us that they love coming to Charlottesville because our audiences are engaged. They listen.
Mm-hmm.
They ask good questions. They want to be a part of that conversation, and they want to learn. So it works both ways. You know, the authors come willing to share their stories, for which we are very grateful, and the audiences come out to hear those stories. We're grateful for that as well.
Yeah. One of my guests here on the Wake Up Call a couple months ago was Michael Suarez, the director of the Rare Book School at UVA. By the way, all of our conversations here on the Wake Up Call can be found on the Sarnesville Podcast Network at seavillepodcast.com. www.ncbc.com, including this one, which, listener, you already know that if that's how you're listening to this. Michael said something that I didn't know, and he said that there are more books being published now than in the history of publishing. More, not just books out there, but physical, actual books. I thought we were running out of trees. But that leads me to ask, how has the rise of ebooks affected the book festival and what people bring and their expectations and how authors and publishers deliver books?
So we don't get that question now near as much as we did maybe 4 or 5 years ago when mm-hmm. ebooks were very much on the rise. I think they've sort of tapered off,
At least plateaued.
Plateaued. And the as far as we're concerned, we want people to read whatever they want to read.
Right.
You know, if it's convenient to read it on your mobile device, if it's convenient to listen to it while you're on long drives, or if it's convenient to pick up a paperback, you know, whatever, we really want to encourage that reading. What we sell and what authors are able to sign is going to be the paper version of that book.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are still book clubs.
Oh, yes.
In town.
Yes.
I'm tossing you a softball on this one because you actually encourage book clubs to get in touch with the festival and come forward as presence at the festivals.
So one of the things that we've tried over the past few years is invite book clubs to plan to come to the festival.
Mm-hmm.
And last year we started tagging books ahead of time that said, you know, this would be a book that would be really good for discussion. This year we took it a little bit further and we created what we called the pop-up book club.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to be a member of a book club. You could just invite friends to read one book. And we said, you know, we picked about a dozen topics, fiction and nonfiction. We tried to make sure they were fewer than, say, 300 pages, so it wasn't daunting.
Sure.
And we provided discussion guides with those authors' bios on the website. So if you picked David Gran and you wanted to read that book about the Osage tribe, there are questions there that you could use to discuss it. And you can use that right up to the festival, go see him. You can use that afterwards if your book club sees him and then wants to talk about it later.
So if you have a book club or you're a member of a book club here in town, how do they find out about that information?
I think that's a website. I think we have a blog post about the pop-up book club.
You do. It's here on my phone.
And then on the schedule by topic, I think you can you can search book club selections.
Yeah. All right. We have not quite 5 minutes left. So I'm just going to ask you, what are the particular events that you want to talk about in the few minutes that we have left that we haven't had a chance to?
We haven't talked about Michael Twitty, who is amazing. Michael Twitty is an historian, a cook, culinarian, and genealogist of his own family. He is a descendant of slaves. He is coming to town through the support of the Wesley Foundation at UVA and a number of other co-sponsors. And he is speaking as part of a panel at 2 o'clock on Friday. He's delivering a keynote at 6 o'clock on Friday. And then he's doing a cooking demo outside on university grounds over fire of demonstrating how his ancestors used to cook.
Wow. Okay. You know what? I looked at the website, but I missed that one. Where does the cooking demonstration take place?
It's still being confirmed, but right now it is scheduled to be on the Grass Triangle, which is where the monument to enslaved peoples
right.
at UVA is going to be built. So right near the anthropology building.
Yep.
To the east side of the rotunda.
Excellent. All right. Yeah. Apparently universities a bit touchy about open flames on campus these days.
They're in full consultation with this program.
Good. Good. Okay. What else in the couple minutes we have left?
You know, Guantanamo was back in the news last week.
Yay.
honestly. We have Andrea Pitzer coming with an incredible history of concentration camps across around the world. Mm-hmm. We have Mark Fallon coming, who used to be with the National Security Council, talking about torture and against torture. And by Skype from Mauritania, we have a Guantanamo detainee, Mahamadou Ould Slahi, who wrote a diary while he was in Guantanamo.
Right. This is the famous redacted diary.
It was published in a redacted form.
Yes.
It is now published in the unredacted form.
Right.
And the three of them will be in conversation about Guantanamo and other concentration.
His story is fascinating because he was writing this diary. It had to be redacted before it could be sent out. And then once he got released, then he had to go back and try to remember what he had written in those passages that were blacked out. And he was very honest in the passages where he couldn't remember exactly what he had written. They just kept him redacted.
He was detained for years and released without charge.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's his story.
Yeah. And that's kind of our story, isn't it? Jane, thank you so much. You come in once a year. I mean, oddly, I want to thank you for the time that you give us every year to come and talk about this, and also say that, of course, we could always use more time because there's so much going on. We encourage you to go to vabook.org and just scroll through. Find, just kind of wander through the website. Find those topics that interest you. Highlight a book. See that it's poetry or current events or history or genealogy, whatever else. Flag that, and you'll find other books on similar topics. Build a schedule for yourself, and then figure out how you're going to clone yourself and manage to go to everything that you want to, because the festival only runs 4 days.
Five days.
That's like I said, because I can't do math. March 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th. You're right. That's 5 days. Wednesday through Sunday, all around town, downtown, at the university, at venues everywhere. You can meet authors. You can buy books. You can bring your book club. Go to vabook.org. Jane, I'm going to give you the last word, any last shout out for the end of the show.
Well, thanks so much, Sean. It's been my pleasure to be here. And we really hope the community, just if you've never been, come out and give one program a try.
Yeah.
If you are one of those people that takes vacation time to come to hit every day, we appreciate that. We look forward to seeing you all there.
Because as we said, 98% of the events are free. This is the Wake Up Call on WPVC. This is Sean McCord.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.